This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. It's great to have you listening today. Several hundred influential people in the field of fresh water were in Milwaukee last week as the Milwaukee Water Council hosted its sixth annual summit. The gathering attracted attendees from around the world, including one Las Vegas woman dubbed the rock star of water. Pat Mulroy is general manager of not only the Las Vegas Valley Water District, but also the Southern Nevada Water Authority. That state's water situation couldn't be more different than that of our own water-rich region. Nevada shares the Colorado River with six neighboring states, yet there is a key similarity. The area struck a water-sharing compact in 1922, kind of like the Great Lakes Compact. But Mulroy says this one wasn't really tested until climate change and droughts with no end in sight struck the region. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz sat down with Mulroy during a break in the summit's proceedings. She says no matter the state of their particular watershed, cities around the country face an almost universal challenge: how to effectively handle aging and often under-equipped infrastructure.
There is this enormous neglected cost that we have to reinvest to renew that infrastructure. I don't see the federal government being the panacea. I mean, look at the challenges, the financial challenges the federal government is facing. And I would hate to see this completely sucked into that very galvanized discussion right now. And you're better off taking responsibility for it, at least at a regional level, and getting people to understand that the days of cheap, free water are rapidly coming to an end, and we're going to end up having to pay more for it. We just went through that in Southern Nevada. You know, we had built up a funding formula for this $2.5 billion worth of infrastructure we had to build over the last 20 years. And now, because of climate change and the need to build the third intake, we're adding another billion on top of that. And we had relied on connection charges. I mean, this is a great story. The community had said growth pays for growth. We're not going to pay for the new guy moving in. Well, when growth all but completely stopped, I mean, we went from collecting $188 million a year in connection charges to three. We went right off the cliff. So now that hard cost, I mean, it's like your mortgage payment. We have to make it. How do you make that payment? And so we just went through this large rate increase, which was very contentious. And it gets down to who pays. So finding that magic formula where every part of the community feels they're not happy about having to pay more, but they at least feel they're paying their fair share, that's where the political dynamic comes in.
You and I don't want to take too much of your time, but the story, you know, Las Vegas and Southern Nevada, the story and of the West is so incredibly compelling, and just, I mean, I think many people will support.
Yeah, I'll do it in a condensed way. I mean, that there's one key underlying factor. First, or a couple. First was that the vital criticality of water began to elevate in the public consciousness. And people began to recognize that there weren't going to be winners and losers. There weren't going to be haves and have-nots. There were only going to be losers and have-nots. That we were all going to run out. And we were all going to run out at the same time. And that the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. And when we did a regional modeling effort, a supply and demand model, and we found out that it wasn't going to work. And the only way for us to be able to truly engage in conservation, truly maximize our resources, truly build the most effective facilities, was by pooling our resources and forming this through a joint powers agreement. I mean, this wasn't mandated on us by the legislature. This was voted on by every local elected official. Every one of them had to sign on the dotted line. And the survival of the community depended on them doing it. And when it got down to that, there was not one anti-vote. There was not one person that voted against it. Because it was so important. And what really helped us was the business community got it right away. And so they became a real political force in pushing the elected officials forward to say, look, we can have the water we need. We can, you know, we're in a much better bargaining position with our neighboring states. We can start really being creative. We can be conservation minded. And we can save billions on infrastructure if we do it together.
So it started, am I right, with, I mean, the first major partnership was within your own state, your own
right.
region,
right.
right? And then just with each step, as things got sort of bleaker and bleaker, I mean, then you formed an agreement with Arizona, right?
Well, all the states have come much closer together.
Right.
I mean, look, you're talking about seven states that each has their army of lawyers and that in the 20th century would love nothing more than to march on the Supreme Court waving their state flag, you know? Until they realized, and through several of the court decisions that came down, that the decisions we were getting from the courts weren't as good as the decisions that can be made when we work with one another. So when we talk now, I can tell Colorado's story as well as Colorado can. I can tell California's, I can tell Arizona's. We know we have the entire river we have to worry about. And we have to make sure it meets everybody's needs. Because the beauty of the compact is that no one state can roll any of the others. But seven states, they can do anything seven states can agree to do. And there's a lot of power in that.
So what was the turning point of moving from the courtroom to each other's offices?
I think it was the drought. The drought was the final push. We started being willing to recognize, okay, the other one doesn't have two heads and, you know, five noses, and they're not vile, evil people, to going, oh my gosh, if Nevada, California, Arizona, if we start really managing our urban resources together, my God, we can prevent any of us from going off the cliff. And that's, I think, when that light went on and when the hard data showed that there was such opportunity in that, it really turned the corner for us.
Now, you said, I think that, were you talking about Las Vegas or your region, that the average expected rainfall it would be expected, was it 2 inches?
No, we used to say our average annual rainfall is 4 inches. Since the turn of the century, yeah, except for this year, we probably had 3 years' worth of rain in a two-hour period.
And that was how much?
Oh, it was about 2 inches. So last year we didn't see an inch. It's bone dry.
So when you're before an audience like this, which is mixed, really, you know, we've got people from around the world, but I think a number of people are from this area. Do they look back at you and they're just disbelief before their eyes? Or what kind of response do you get from, you know, people who may not have, lived what you're living?
It is very hard for someone on the East Coast to understand. Georgia probably comes, the Atlanta area probably comes the closest. But it is, for the Westerner gets it. I mean, it's such a dry part of the country. Attitudes are different, laws are different. It is disbelief, and people have a hard time getting their heads around it and how you would manage your water resources, because it's plentiful in so many areas. I mean, look how fortunate Milwaukee is with all the water that they have.
So what is the value in, I mean, when you pick and choose where you go, I mean, clearly there's a lot of people here who are sharing ideas and innovation, ideas about innovation and so forth, and mutual frustrations. But what's the value to you as a professional being at a conference like this?
You know, the personal value I take out of this is getting people to start thinking about water differently. To hear a story that a community woke up one morning and Mother Nature had taken away what they had taken for granted. You know, we thought we had conquered the Colorado River. We had plumbed it. We had engineered it. We built the greatest dam structures in the United States. And we'd mastered and gotten this river under control. And Mother Nature came out of nowhere and just virtually wiped out a good portion of it. It makes you start appreciating and recognizing the value. And I don't mean dollar and cents value. I mean the community value of having a reliable resource. And that there's a personal responsibility, you know, how we use water resources in this country individually, as a community, and as a state. It's not just something we can take for granted. I think those days are gone. I mean, the combined impact of what climate change will bring invariably, long before we mitigate, we're going to have to adapt. The ever-increasing population numbers, just in total numbers, and it makes us appreciate what other countries are going through. When you look at an India, when you look at an Africa, when you look at a China, we've been very spoiled and we've been very lucky. But there's a stewardship responsibility that comes with it. It's not just a right, it's a responsibility.
You know, the Colorado, what was the first compact? The 1922, it was the Colorado River Compact?
Correct.
So decades later, we've got the Great Lakes Compact.
Right.
Do you think that's a good compact to have struck?
It will go the same fate as the Colorado River Compact, which it will have to adapt with changing conditions, because if it doesn't change and it doesn't adapt, it'll be so rigid that it'll be brittle and it'll fall apart. What keeps the Colorado River Compact alive is that it has morphed over the years. Not in any legalistic, overt amendments, but it was written flexibly enough to allow seven states to do what seven states have to do, as long as they do it together. And if the Great Lakes Compact has that same platform, then it can work. If it's rigid, if it's viewed rigidly, it will crumble and it will disappear, because it will no longer enjoy the support, because it'll be seen as an impediment rather than a platform upon which future improvements can be built.
Pat Mulroy is the general manager of the Las Vegas Valley Water District and the Southern Nevada Water Authority. She spoke with WUWM's Susan Bentz last week at the 6th Annual Water Summit held by the Milwaukee Water Council. Auto contributor Mark Savage stops by next to chat about crossovers, not the skating move, the class of cars. We'll learn more in a moment on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.